Hello, everyone. Welcome to our mega episode on the three new DC Absolute series, although I guess that's a little misleading because actually Martian Manhunter and Green Lantern are the new Absolute series. We are talking about the three older Absolute series, Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman. We are Uncanny Treks. I am Bob in Cascadia. That is Matt in the Southland. Matt, how you doing this evening?
Doing great, Bob. Just want to make a correction there. You left out the Flash.
Oh, I did. I thought I said Flash, Martian Manhunter.
Well, maybe you did, Bob. Maybe you did, but it doesn't really matter because I do want to make it clear that the Absolute Universe is DC's answer to Marvel's Ultimate Universe.
It only took him 20 years, Matt. 25 years. It only took him 25 years.
But did it, Bob? Did it? Because like I feel like Ultimate Universe was the modernization of the Marvel characters, okay? They were trying to bring him into like that time period, which I guess was around 2003, 4, 5, somewhere in there, right?
Well, it was, but it was also interesting because at the same time, they were more or less the same time they were modernizing the main books. Like that's the era, especially for X-Men, of like the Morrison new X-Men.
Right. I mean, we started to see them like, you know, change a lot of things for the better, for the most part. I enjoyed the Ultimate line with the Spider-Man stuff. Fantastic Four was hit or miss. X-Men was really cool for a little while. Then it got really weird. And I kind of let off after probably the first 50 issues of those specific series. I didn't make it all the way through. Were you able to get through the entire Ultimate run?
No, I have read very little of the Ultimates. I've read basically no Ultimate X-Men and no Ultimate Fantastic Four. I think I read the first two Ultimate Avengers series, but hardly remember them and didn't like them at the time, don't like them now. And then you loaned me, I think it was the Barnes & Noble hardcover exclusive.
Oh, I had a huge, huge, huge coffee table type book. I mean, like freaking doorstop. Yeah.
First 50 issues, I think, of Ultimate Spider-Man. Yeah. And so I read those and I rather liked those, but I never kept going. Although I did also, once they brought in Miles, I did start with the new Miles stuff and read the, I think it wound up to be like four or six trades of Ultimate Miles before he came into the 616.
Yeah, you literally had to have a table just to read that book because it was so damn big. It's a big ass book.
It was quite imposing. But yeah, so the only one I can really speak to are Ultimate Avengers and Ultimate Spider-Man. Liked Ultimate Spider-Man a lot. Did not care for Ultimate Avengers. Have always been vaguely curious to revisit Ultimate X-Men, but if I really cared, I probably would have done it by now.
And Bob, for clarification, I think, was it Ultimate Avengers or were they just called the Ultimates? Because I know I had comics called Ultimates.
They were called the Ultimates. I'm just calling them Ultimate Avengers for clarity.
Okay, I completely forgotten they existed until you said that. Then I was like, oh yeah, I also owned all the trades for Ultimates. So said they were... I did.
You went past the first two, because I think Mark Miller just did the first two, and then I think it was other writers after that, and apparently, I've not read them, but apparently, like, Ultimates 3 and 4 are supposed to be god-awful.
I had a ton of the Ultimate stuff. I had a whole bookshelf just lined with the crap. So I'm pretty sure I had this, because I remember the Captain America stuff being ridiculous. So I'll just leave it at that. We said all that because I want to just point out that the Absolute Universe here is really just an Elseworlds thing. That's how I feel about it. It's meant to be set on, like, Earth Alpha, and it's supposed to have this big Darkseid energy. Darkseid has, like, changed or altered something within each character's origin story and made it supposed to be worse for the character, but I think what we see throughout is that it actually works out for the better. And Scott Snyder specifically said that the main continuity is meant to be Superman inspired, whereas this is meant to be Darkseid inspired or Darkseid infused. Does that make sense?
And that does. So that's interesting. Was that set up? Is the crossover called Absolute Evil, or was it called something else?
Now here, Bob, I'm gonna have to stop you. I don't know, Bob, because I refuse to go into the actual. I have crisis fatigue. Some sort of like PTSD from crisis, like from all the crises. Well, I've had enough of them.
To be clear, I really like these three trades a lot. And I also, I'm interested by what I've read of Absolute Green Lantern and Absolute Martian Manhunter. So we'll probably cover the other three series soon. I'm not interested by what I've read so far of Absolute Flash, but we'll still cover that too, I guess. But I will say, maybe when these characters become a Justice League, which I assume will happen in about a year, I think that's going to kill my interest in the Absolute universe because these characters are very interesting solo. I don't necessarily think they would be very interesting on a team. But even if I can get through an Absolute Justice League of America, as soon as this turns in, which it inevitably will, as soon as this turns into a crossover with the main Earth, I'm out.
You know it's going to happen, Bob.
Oh, I know. I'm just saying, when it does, I'm out.
Yeah.
But well, I'm enjoying it right now, and that's all I can ask for.
I am too, Bob. I'm actually enjoying all three of the series we'll be covering today. One of them specifically I may not continue on with. We'll see. But of the
is
three,
Absolute Superman?
Yeah. Actually is, Bob. Just not digging it as much.
That's definitely the weakest. And I don't love saying that because I like Jason Aaron a lot. I like Rafe Sandoval a lot. And there is interesting things that it's doing, but I agree with you. It's by far the weakest of the three.
All right, Bob. So let's get into it, though, with Batman.
All right. And just for listeners' clarification, we're going to go through what will be the first trade paperback of each series. So that's about 18 issues. We'll try to go pretty fast, keep this under the hour. We're going to start with Batman. The issues in Absolute Batman don't have titles, so I just titled them by the first line of dialogue, which I find actually usually work pretty well. So we'll go by that.
So in Absolute Batman, this dude is a freaking beast. Batman has a different origin. His parents were not filthy rich. Thomas Wayne was not a doctor. His mother, what was Martha Wayne originally? Just like a philanthropist or something? Or like
I think she's a social worker in this, but yeah, originally she was just like a rich philanthropist.
Right. But here she's definitely a social worker with like some political aspects. But as far as this goes, Bruce also, he grew up with a child. He actually had kids to hang out with. And they just happened to, Bob, be, you know, the same kids that they have the same names as all the Batman villains in the mainstream continuity. Kind of weird, you know what I'm saying?
We got Killer Croc, we got Riddler, we got Penguin, we got Two-Face, and we got Catwoman, all his cute little kids hanging out with little Bruce.
Which I thought was going to be lame. After I read through the issues twice, the second time around, I'm like, okay, I like where this is going. Because we've seen these same characters so many times as bad guys, as these gimmicky villains. Seeing them more as like these aspects of Bruce, because they're really just taking on what Bruce doesn't know how to do himself. You know, like flying the planes, things that most humans aren't going to have all this knowledge of. That
he's
somehow
outsourcing some of his Batman skills to them.
Bingo. Yeah, whereas this Batman is just one bulky, big, tough dude. That's a really good, you know, he's got this, you know, engineering skill. He's able to create this suit that's more of this, like, feat of engineering. I mean, he compares it to this bridge that he tried to build as a kid that was in the shape of a bat. And that's, you know, that's, it ha- the tensile strength, stuff like that. There's still so many suits. The suit, though, it's metal, Bob. It's so much. Did you get glimpses of the Batman metal stuff when you first saw it?
Oh, that's, yeah, I should have. I didn't think about that at all, but. It is interesting how like much bulkier it is, and definitely Nick Dragata on the art does take a lot of pains to recreate a lot of classic scenes, especially from year one in Batman Dark Knight Returns with him, the bulkier Batman. So yeah, but yeah, you're definitely right that this is definitely extending Scott Snyder's aesthetic in Zero Year, and which I did think about, and Metal, which I didn't think about, but I should have.
But Bob, my favorite panel from this issue is on page 23, where you see Bruce is upside down, hanging like a bat. But it's the first image you get to see of his suit. And he's wrapped up in it, and they're shooting bullets, and they're just pinging off of it. And this is when you know that there's something weird about this. Because we'd already seen the actual design for this before, like the previews. So we weren't going to be surprised when we saw it the first, like the full suit. But seeing it wrapped up like a bat, and everything just pinging and powing off of it is really cool. But then he unveils himself. And I'll be damned, Bob, those things he uses on his hands, like the cape extension, it's like some kind of like rod or baton, that needs to be incorporated into a video game mechanic. That is awesome.
Yeah. Matt wants to play through the Arkham games with that.
Yes, make it happen, please.
So I did want to ask this, you know, start with issue number one, bats are crazy. What surprised you more initially? We have Jim Gordon as the mayor, as Bill de Blasio. We have Swole Harvey Bullock, who's police commissioner and in uniform, or we have Barbara, who at first I thought was Montoya.
I thought Barbara was Montoya too, and it threw me for a loop. Like, and then you've got Julia Pennyworth at her in there as well. Like, she's part of this.
Oh, yeah, yeah. She's ignoring her dad's calls.
Yeah, so I'm like, I got to keep up with all these weird secondary characters. But yeah, I mean, overall, I do like the designs. I like the idea they're going in different directions. Although I feel like they're covering some of the same territory with Gordon being the mayor, because in this, you know, he is the mayor, and in the main light, isn't he like, you know, having sex with the mayor?
Having sex with the mayor's wife.
Oh, okay, there we go.
That's
so
the spoiler in the Chip Zdarsky right now. I'm not going to apologize for spoiling that to people who haven't read it, because it's terrible and you shouldn't read it. So, Matt, I did want to ask, do you think a certain type of Batman fan, would they be more offended that Batman is swole? Would they be more offended by the weighted cape with the rod extensions? Would they be more offended by the fact that he cuts off people's hands and, you know, like blinds Black Mask with his bat ears in the climax? Spoilers. Would they be more offended that Batman says the F word, or would they be more offended that Batman uses a shotgun?
Bob, personally, like as a child, I would have been more offended by his swoleness, just because I like my Batman to be like that design we used to see as a child. You know, the Neil Adams look. Isn't that right?
Yeah. It was Jose Luis Garcia Lopez, but very similar to that.
Right. So yeah, the swoleness probably would have thrown me off as a kid. The weighted cape's cool. I don't have an issue with that, especially after seeing him use a weighted cape in Batman Begins. The behanding, that's pushing it a little too far.
That's fair. You said what your favorite panel was for the first issue. Mine was on page 31, and it's the Batman Who Lifts, which I'm always just going to refer to him as the Batman Who Lifts. The Batman Who Lifts is in a Kelly Jones crouch, like Kelly Jones used to draw in the 90s in a very gothic way. And he's like swolely looking down into the mask of a Black mask. That was really cool.
Another really cool panel, Bob, though, too, is on page 26, where he's using those cape rods to like do this like Rob Van Dam split kick.
Yeah, that's fun. That's fun.
They got real creative with the cape. What do you think about him being able to pull his ears out of his mask?
That's crazy. That's crazy. I don't know. It's one of those. I don't know how neat it actually is, but I'm willing to go with it. Like, clearly Nick Dragata and Scott Snyder are running with it, and I'm fine with that. I did want to note a couple of like animated series resemblances. On page 36, the statues outside City Hall really look like the statues from the animated film Mask of the Phantasm. And then also, this is like skipping ahead a little to issue 2, but we have Batman and all of his childhood friends playing poker. And it really does feel like almost Gotham, the famous episode of Batman.
Oh, yeah.
Was a big influence on this reimagining, right?
Yeah, I didn't even put that together, Bob. That's crazy. Yeah, you're right. It does remind me of that. What did you think about Alfred's portrayal in this, Bob?
I thought it was kind of lame, but it worked in context, I guess is what I would say. Whereas I always refer to this Batman as the Batman Who Lives, I will always refer to this Alfred as Agent Alfred.
Yeah, Agent Alfred, there you go. I feel like that's what we've moved toward with Alfred. Like, he used to just be this, you know, butler type who took care of Batman. Now he's become this, I mean, he always had like former ties to military, acting, that kind of stuff. But here, they're really starting to emphasize it more so now, or I guess because it's people don't have butlers anymore like that. That would be.
Yeah. You know, and it definitely is drawing on Pennyworth, the secret origin of Batman.
Yes.
Butler, the 3-season show.
Right.
I jokingly said earlier that it took DC 25 years to do Ultimates. And in a way, that's true. In another way, they did the Earth One graphic novels back. Was that late aughts, early teens? And there, Alfred was already, he wasn't so much a secret agent as he was a spec ops operator in that one.
I do like him having little bats all over his face at the end. That's another, the art in this is great. It really is, because there's that image of when he gets shot by the shotgun, he's altered it to have the bat or batarangs. That is insane. But then the best line, this is when the metal thing hit me. Alfred goes, where the hell is he going to land? And then the next image, you see Batman just shooting off. It looks like he's on the moon, like flying down on his motorcycle. Like,
yeah, that's a great image. That's
beautiful image for the end.
The last little tick I caught that I liked is, you know, we have the big reveal at the end of issue 1 that Martha's still alive.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, she's greeting Bruce, and she has the same kind of like verbal tick that Damian always does. And I found that really charming. Yeah, Martha and Damian have the same tick.
Love it. All right, Bob. So issue one, I read issue one after when it first dropped. I read issue one. I liked it. I thought it was a very interesting take. I did feel like it was more of the Elseworlds stories we read when we were younger. I feel like it was in that direction. But, you know, those were all like one shots, whereas this is going to be an ongoing series. So pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So issue number two, you know, Dad, please open the door. And, you know, we already talked about Agent Alfred. We get a little bit of a mention of like Red Hood as a resistance group at the beginning of this issue, which is interesting because that somewhat plays into how Scott Snyder handled Red Hood in the Zero Year stuff back in his run about 10 years ago. I did want to ask, Matt, we get the line Batman AF. Am I wrong in finding that pretty cringy?
It's cringy, Bob, but you want to something even more cringy. When Scott Snyder first sold the idea of the absolute universe thing, it was originally going to be called DC AF.
I'm glad they went with absolute.
No joke.
That's rough, man.
So,
in that spirit, I do want to ask, you know, we get the enswollening of a lot of characters in DC AF.
Including the Batmobile.
Yeah, including the Batmobile. But of the humans, between Swole Batman, Swole Penguin, Swole Bullock, and Swole Agent Alfred, which did you find more surprising?
I mean, Swole Bullock just does not fit with the whole characterization of him. Like, it's as weird as that is. We're recording this, Bob, when the second issue of the Return of Hush, or Hush 2, or whatever it's called, has been released, where we got our Swole Riddler. So I'm kind of having trouble, like, really getting a good, you know, getting past that.
Swole Bullock is rough, especially because, like, yeah, they do think they add things to Batman, Penguin, and Alfred, but Bullock is just a background character. And so not having him be a fat slob is kind of like, well, you've taken away his mission, Dave.
Like, you're not even going to know it's Bullock, you know, unless it's like, you just, you know, you hear
unless them. Unless it's just, somebody calls him Harvey. Yeah.
Right.
Although, I guess I have to agree with you that none of these are nearly as bad as Swole Riddler in Hush 2, Part 2.
Yeah. If you want to see how to really ruin a character on one page, that's how you do it. And what's stupid is, Bob, that we've seen Swole Riddler done well with that issue before Nightfall, where he gets injected by Bane for like 24 hours.
Envenomed. No, that's what I texted Noah. It was like Jim Lee read that comic and he's like, that's too over the top. Let me bring it in and make it more restrained.
Yeah, let me make it look like he's going out and getting like creatine powder or something. Like,
what other question I have about, and I'm generally unsure about this. We get the idea in this issue that's going to, you know, play out through the rest of the arc and probably be important in later arcs, of instead of Arkham Asylum, we have Ark-M, A-R-K, capital M. And it's this kind of secret bunker system that is planted throughout the different world cities. And, you know, Gotham has Ark-M as opposed to Ark-L or Ark-N. And Matt, is Ark capital M, is that brilliant or cringy? I go back and forth.
It's kind of cool. I'll give it to him. I'll give him a pass. It is kind of cool. He gets away from the last name of Arkham, so you don't have to do that whole history of like that crap. It's something completely different. I watch a lot of like, I play a lot of like, this is kind of weird, but I play a lot of games that are kind of like Japanese RPGs and stuff like that.
Metal Gear Solid type.
That kind of stuff. These are a lot of abbreviations and stuff like that in there that mean different things that in the actual like, are reality, but they mean stuff different in their games. And that to me, I'm like, okay, that makes sense. I like that. And I've always thought that was like the coolest thing when you take something like that, just redo the spelling. So nice job. Nice job, guys. Even though it better pay off in the end, whatever it is. Whatever bunkers we're talking about.
Issue number three, Will You Slow Down? There is some really good stuff in this issue of Agent Alfred hating the Batman, especially while on top of the Bat Truck. You're going to call it the Swole Batmobile. I'm going to call it the Bat Truck.
The Bat Truck. I want like a Lego version of this thing.
Oh man. So did you feel like this issue and the next issue four, were really influenced by like Mad Max, specifically like Fury Road and Furiosa?
Oh yeah, for sure. 100%. I mean, this thing, it's a bulldozer. That's literally what it is. It's a bat bulldozer. I mean, it's got, if you take the front of a bulldozer and turn it into a bat symbol to push things away, that's what it is. And it goes kind of fast too. It's got some jet engines on the back.
And am I correct in thinking that they're teasing Riddler is going to make an Ultron? Does that seem to be the direction they're going?
Yes. So that's when it got a little weird, when I saw the little robot thing and I was like, what are they going for here? They got to include AI in this somehow. because they're trying to tell a modern tale and making it like, you know, Batman's your blue collar everyday guy trying to be the vigilante person that he can be.
Yeah, I have a lot of enthusiasm for this series, but there is a version of this series I'm really going to hate where if just, you know, the next arc seems like it's going to be Bane, but if every arc after that is like, oh, look at Two-Face go evil. Oh, look at Penguin go evil. Oh, look at Riddler go evil and create an Ultron. That's going to really suck. I don't want to read that.
Yeah. So, Bob, did you find the scene where, like, Black Mask is beating the crap and shit in training, like, with his, like, henchmen very awkward?
So Scott Snyder likes to be super topical, and so clearly going for Black Mask is a kind of like evil Andrew Tate, evil.
Yes.
Logan. And I was okay with it. I thought it was really funny that they make Bibbo Bobowski do the job to Black Mask in this issue. And honestly, now that I'm talking about it, it gives you real like Logan Paul, Mike Tyson vibes.
Oh yeah, because Bibbo was that's a good connection, Bob. I did not think about that because he was the boxer and everything.
Yeah. Poor Bibbo.
Poor Bibbo.
It is funny. You know, we'll save it to when we get to Absolute Superman, but we have Absolute Superman gets to take a major thing from the Batman mythos. Whereas, you know, what does Absolute Batman take from Superman mythos? Bibbo.
Got some Bibbo there. Just a little bit of Bibbo. Yeah, he did kind of stick out like a sword. He did just kind of stick out because he's like, he's a Metropolis guy. What the heck is he doing here?
Yeah. Well, moving on to issue number 4 for the court's clarification, I just wanted to flag my favorite panel in this issue was on page 7, where we see the Golden Age version of Absolute Batman or his trial run. Looking a gun. He's rocking silicon vampire fangs.
He's red-eyed too, Bob. That's the other part too. There's something about red eyes on Batman that makes him way cooler. I don't know. They need to go with that more often.
No, that's cool. I actually like the Batman Who Lives design a lot, but man, I could have read a whole series about Vampire Golden Age Batman too.
And the way they do the art for those specific scenes is just really cool. Like it's got this, it's supposed to be the past, so they give it like this old school look, like the way his outfit's shaded and just the way his ears are shaped. They went old school with it. Love it.
Yeah, man. And I just want to really shout out Nick Jurgada, the artist on this. Mm-hmm. I really love the series he did with Hickman, East of West, although that one, it ends a little bit of a fizzle, as I recall. But man, Dragata's art just, it owns. And yeah, seeing him do like Scott Snyder, like action movie Batman is really cool too.
But yeah, this issue really gives us an idea of how he's taken his engineering skills to design these weapons and things that he uses, and also how he's altered the cityscape. Like he's using the tops of buildings as his caves because they're apparently empty and abandoned.
They did that a little in issue 1, which I thought was like a really cool idea and a really interesting way to like literalize the bat metaphor.
Yeah, I really like that.
No, that's great. That's great. Well, then issue number 5 is You're All Done. And for me, I just wanted to flag my favorite panel from this issue, which is on page 16. And you see the Batman Who Lives on fire reflected in Black Mask mask. And they just hit him with a flamethrower. And Black Mask says the only hero of this story is money, which again, just, yeah, totally making him the evil YouTube influencer. But I loved it.
Well, Bob, this issue has the best panel in the entire run. It's on page 12. Okay.
What?
It's where the guy who Batman cut his hand off with the axe, you know, the cut, yeah, Batman. Yeah. Yeah. Well, this guy's back. Yeah. He's getting payback. So he jumps on Batman's back and Batman has this big like thing he wears with his cape that can like alter. It can change. It can shift. Anyway, spikes shoot through. And the next page has Batman fighting other people with a henchman stuck to his back. And he's yelling, I'm stuck. I'm stuck. Get me off him. Please, sir, put me. And then the spikes retract and the dude just falls off. They have got to do an animated version of this. The animation for this would be amazing. Just the thought of them doing like the spike move there.
Yeah, man. It seems like James Gunn has retired the DC animated original movie.
Oh, man.
It would be really cool to bring him back for this.
But on top of that, Bob, directly below that, you've got another panel where Batman takes, like, the cape chain piece, puts it around some dude's neck, and flings him over his head. Like, it's so comical. It looks like God of War type stuff from the video game.
Just Batman and the ultra violence. And then, you know, issue number 6 is, you know, you could title it Roman Sinonis is dropping crates filled with masks and firearms across Coppa in an effort to encourage people to join his party animal's reign of violence, which is the first line of the issue.
So basically, Bob, it's the Purge.
It's the Purge, yeah. It's Jordan Peterson or Andrew Tate do the Purge as Black Mask. And I did want to ask, is it a little maybe too on the nose with, like, Black Mask has an evil Google Glass, and, you know, we get explicitly, like, shelter-in-place orders. Is this a little too on the nose?
Too on the nose, Bob. I will say this, Bob. You want to talk about on the nose. Page 10 has a beautiful drawing that's straight from Dark Knight Returns, but it's still awesome because it's him in the new suit.
Him dropping?
With the lightning, yeah. Flipping amazing.
Straight up Dark Knight Returns.
Yeah.
And you were talking about the ultraviolence last issue. I'll go with the ultraviolence on page 16 of... We have Batman Who Lives hitting Black Mask with bowling balls. Oh, man. Brutal. Just brutal.
Okay. The best act of brutal violence is on page 19, where his ears go into Black Mask's eyes.
Oh, not somehow. He basically headbutts Black Mask.
Yeah, but they rotate. He has to rotate them, though, doesn't he? Like, they go choo on the previous page. They go choo. So, yeah, going to need that action figure. Want to be able to squeeze his legs and his ears flip. They're going to make that one, please.
Yeah, I will say that last Joker page, too, on page 23. Just, oh, God, so disturbing. So disturbing.
Yeah, what are they going for with that, Bob? He's got, like, a head growing out of him.
Yeah, he's got a head growing out of him, but it's also got, like, arms that are, like, wrapped around and legs that are, like, wrapped around him. And then there's other heads and other torsos around. His shoulders. He's almost like he's wearing a suit of people. God, it's weird.
Yeah, but on top of that, you do notice, though, his hand looks decrepit, and it slowly becomes like it's supposed to, like a normal hand.
Yeah.
So I don't know what that's implying. He's got some kind of, like, regenerative power, or it's tied to Lazarus. I don't know.
We don't necessarily see we don't see the coloring on the body growing on him or sitting on him.
Okay, this is really gross, Bob, but I have a feeling this is tied to stem cells somehow.
Yeah, that's probably right. That's probably right.
Okay.
Any other Batman Who Lives thoughts, or should we go to the Superman with a living cape?
Let's go to Superman with a living cape, Bob, because I'm just going to say, I love Batman. I thought the Batman stuff's great. I will be continuing on with it until it gets really bad, until he joins the Justice League.
Until he joins the Justice League, or if that's good, until it crosses over with the main DCU.
Yes. All right, Bob, so let's jump into Superman. We're 9 million light years ago from Earth.
Yeah. So number one's down in the dirt. And, you know, we spend a lot of time in Krypton in these issues, which I actually thought was cool. I enjoyed. So, you know, I think my favorite panel, indeed, in the first Superman issue is on page 4. You get to see, like, the crystal skyscraper size super power capacitors on Krypton. I thought that was really cool. And in general, I thought the way that, I mean, we see the Kents later and they do something a little different with the Kents, but the way they kind of merge the L's and the Kents in this comic was really interesting. And, you know, kind of to your point about Elseworld's energy in this whole enterprise.
Oh, totally. Just the whole way the society set up within Krypton, where you've got the scientist at the top of the hierarchy. And then, you know, you've got the people of steel at the bottom. You know, it's kind of sad, but it's good.
And I do like that there's such an explicit class struggle angle to this version of Superman. I also really like, you know, since Peacemaker's gotten really popular, people, like, just think Peacemaker is cool. And it's Peacemaker is not cool. Peacemaker is a fascist. He sucks. And it is nice that Jason Aaron understands that and just uses the Peacemakers as total fascist stooges. I appreciate that very much so. I will say, I get that you feel like you need to do something different with Lois Lane in the, you know, the 21st century. Like, being a journalist maybe doesn't feel like enough anymore. But, man, her being a mercenary, even though it's like her coming out of being a mercenary is the arc of, you know, these issues, like, her being a mercenary kind of rubs me the wrong way.
But, Bob, she's a reporter. She likes to write her own reports.
Yeah. So she's a mercenary who's becoming a reporter.
She likes to write up her own reports and stuff. It's fun for her. She don't like the AI to do it.
Well, and then in issue number 2, Matt, Son of Nothing, I wanted to flag my favorite panel is early on. We see a young Cal sleeping with Crypto while his teacher is chiding him over the distance learning software for not using his full assignments.
And Bob, that is how it really works. And then my favorite panel, Bob's on 8, when we finally learned about this like dust cape thing that I thought was kind of a cool idea. And if we're going to be using CGI capes in movies, we might as well make them do something neat.
Yeah, I guess I have sort of mixed feelings. I think the idea of the nanobot cape, not necessarily something I really want to see, but okay, it's an interesting idea, and they do some cool visual things with it. The idea of it being like a talking buddy, I don't. Especially because it's like, it really feels way too much like they do capes in the Doctor Strange movies.
Yeah, okay, I didn't even think about that, but it is very similar to how they use that. I think it's kind of a cool idea to add it. And also it gets rid of the whole, like, where does he hide the cape thing? Because it's just dust. It's just dust.
Well, Matt, I did want to ask your take on something interesting. We get a very new version of Lois being horny for Superman. You know, you might think of the classic terrible poem from the 78 movie, but here it's just Lois really liking how Superman smells.
Yeah, she really loves the way he smells. This is romance in 2025, folks.
It's all about the scent, baby. It's all about the scent. To move on to issue number 3, it's Boy from the Purple Prairie, which also kind of funny that, you know, Krypton has a prairie, blah, blah, blah. I thought that was kind of cute. But my favorite panel is on page 8, and we see all of Krypton's cute little woodland creatures, slightly alien cute little woodland creatures getting killed by the kryptonite seeping up. That was grim and fun, I thought.
It was very grim. My favorite panel, Bob's on page 14, where we get to see Laura actually with like this giant gun. It gave me like Terminator 2 vibes.
Okay, so Linda Hamilton in Terminator 2.
Yeah.
I was thinking, because later she just full on gets into armor. So I was, do you like Laura L being steel?
Yeah, I do. I do like the mask. I think that's really cool. And I hope we see those kind of masks later on, just, you know, like Superman doing shit in space or something.
I dig
the armor on the face.
Well, and then in issue number 4, Chasing the Storm, my favorite panel was on page 4, where we see Lois get a peacemaker, who actually is the future cyborg Superman. It's Hank Henshaw, and she makes him fillet a taser. Again, I don't like Lois as a mercenary. I don't necessarily need Lois to be a great fighter, but yeah, I hate peacemakers, and so I'm happy to see Lois make one fillet a taser, even if it's future cyborg Superman. Okay.
So, Bob, do you have any thoughts, though, on them deciding that, you know, once his parents realize they need to get off Krypton or whatever, once the L's realize that, they build a giant, like, ship, and they're going to take, like, families and of people. And that's very different from what we originally remember. It was more like, you know, we just have time to get our kid and put him in here, or we're just going to make one for our own family.
That's a cool, interesting variation on the myth, to be honest.
It's like, yeah, they want to help everybody, which kind of fits with Superman, like, his whole... Him being a young boy, seeing his parents being so good to other people really fits better with the character being so good on Earth, because we're not innately good.
Yeah. And it is just interesting. In this way, it almost makes him more like Supergirl, right? Because the big difference between Superman and Supergirl, Supergirl has memories of Krypton. Mm-hmm. She grew up speaking Kryptonese. So to make Superman more like Supergirl, I think is more interesting. And so I really like that it makes him more alien. I really like that it makes him more class conscious because he comes from the Workers Guild. I think all that's good.
And like I pointed out at the beginning at the top of this episode, is that that's the big change here. With Batman, it was that he doesn't have money. With Superman, it's that he actually did grow up on Krypton for a little while, got to spend time with his parents. And we don't get the birthing matrix we had in the 80s, you know, with...
Oh. No, quitting Perling Nature alone.
Yeah, and then, or we don't get to, yet. He was an infant, so, you know, he didn't really have know his parents at all.
Yeah, no, that's fair. To go on to issue number 5, Matt, did you recognize the title of this one, Ad Astra Per Aspera?
Yes, Bob, and you all should recognize that from our previous episodes, where we did a kind of a deep dive into some things that had that same title.
Yeah, we looked at a Star Trek Strange New Worlds episode that had that title, and then we looked at a Soviet film from the 80s. From Latin, it means to the stars by the hard ways, or through the thorns to the stars, more poetically. I always like that as a phrase. I'd say in this issue, my favorite panel is 12, where we see Krypto save a young Cal by his shirt collar because he's about to fall into the kryptonite like the cute little woodland creatures did.
Yeah.
So that was my favorite panel.
Yeah, if I had to pick a favorite panel issue 5, Bob, I would probably have to go with where he's like, it's sad, but it's on page 17, where his parents are like, they got their hands up and he's got his hands up. It's got that kind of Star Trek thing to it. Like, you know, hands against the windows looking out, you know, because, you know, he's never going to see him again.
Yeah. Sad.
But you do see that Crypto's in his own little bubble. So he may make it back.
And then to move on to the last issue, Son of Smallville, did you have a favorite panel out of this one, Matt?
Well, in the final issue, Bob, I want to go ahead and say this, though. This had the weakest cover, and I don't know what it was about it. I feel like the cover should have just been a panel within the issue. So I know I usually don't comment on that, but I just want to point that out, because when I was reading through this, like, that cover just doesn't flow right with me. I feel bad to being so mean about it, but
I don't hate it, but I can kind of see what you're getting at.
Yeah.
It is like that in some ways the art kind of ended with 5 and 6 is more of an epilogue / preview for the next arc.
Right.
So that also kind of, you know, maybe reading it like this, maybe month to month, that's better, but reading it all together like this throws off the rhythm a little bit.
Yeah. Well, my favorite panel is, it's the series on page 19 where you see the first shot has the tank, and they're all in the Smallville farm. And, you know, Kal-El's really pissed and upset. You can see it in his face. But below that, you see Jonathan Kent. And it looks like, you know, he's been hit in the face with a gun at some point. You can still see the mark, which makes me like, that just made me cringe a little bit because I felt bad. But then he says, son, please. And then Martha goes, go. So it's like, eh. Like, you just, it's very emotional. You know, they did a really good job building that up.
Yeah, it's interesting because usually in the Superman mythos, the Kents are the source of stability.
Right.
A constant presence, especially for us who, you know, just grew up with the Kents always being alive and Lois and Clark and, you know, John Byrne and after Superman. And so it's interesting to have them be this like source of tragedy, almost more like Batman's parents.
Right. They don't know him as long. They don't raise him from infancy. Yeah. He's already almost an adult by the time he gets to Earth.
Yeah, no, that is interesting. My favorite panel was just, I thought the last page of this is very intriguing with Ra's al Ghul coming out. I like that a lot. I'm looking forward to see Superman versus Ra's al Ghul.
Yeah, what direction do you think they're going to go with that, Bob? Why pick Ra's? Because even you've said before that you thought Ra's was a better Superman villain.
Oh, no, I don't think that.
I thought you did. I thought you said in a previous podcast that you thought he might be a good one.
No, I said I like the episode of Superman, the animated series, where Ra's is a villain. I like it. No, I do not think he's a better Superman villain. Well, I mean, that said, I'm interested in seeing where this goes. But yeah.
Me too. That's what I thought was cool. I was like, well, this is going to be kind of neat because this is a direction we haven't really seen as much before. Did you catch on, though, that he has one of those weird tattoos like Wonder Woman has?
Oh, no, I didn't catch on to that. Then so we're going to do Sorcerer Ra's, I guess.
We're already making some connections.
Yeah, I guess that is like he's got one of those magic arm tattoos. I will say, like, if I were going to be a pessimist about this, I would say that one of the, like, Ra's al Ghul's strong angle is that, you know, he's an environmentalist. He wants to reform the world. And I don't know, like, it seems like just turning him into, like, a generic evil magic corporate overlord, that could be kind of bad. Like, what's the point of Ra's if you just do that? And maybe that's the direction this is going with him. So in that sense, maybe I'm not as excited. But I don't know. I think it could be intriguing. And I like you, I'm definitely the most down on Absolute Superman, but I'm still looking forward to reading the second arc.
I am too. It'll be interesting to see where they go with it. And the next issue is called Into the Mind of Brainiac. So we're going to be seeing some Brainiac.
Yeah.
Which I think we saw a little hint of at the end of one of the issues.
We did. Yeah. Well, let's move on. And I got to say, man, I don't know if this is true for you, but for me, the Wonder Woman Absolute, the Absolute Wonder Woman, Volume 1, Last Amazon, far and away, I thought the best of these, far and away to me.
I'm going to have to say, Bob, I'm going to disagree and put Batman a little bit above. I like the Wonder Woman stuff, but the problem I'm having is that I've seen this type of mythology stuff done in a lot of other mediums.
Yeah. See, I don't play God of War, so.
And there you go.
He said it.
I'm glad you already identified that, Bob. That video game school you work at's paying off in more ways than financially.
The difference is I think that just Absolute Batman's a little too 9/11. I like Scott Snyder, all of his comics are always about 9/11. And it's a little too 9/11 and a little too like, I don't like the state of the world today. Whereas Absolute Wonder Woman, I just feel like is a lot wittier than Absolute Batman.
It is, and it has a kaiju, and that's why you like it.
Actually, I like kaiju a lot. The kaiju in this, not my favorite thing really about it. I like making Wonder Woman more magical. I like the dynamic of having Cersei be your mom instead of the Paradise Island Amazons. I like all that.
I do think that was an interesting take and a good direction to go with this. And to give her these like more unique abilities that are not what we usually see with Wonder Woman.
I did want to ask, because this, maybe I'm wrong, but this doesn't just seem to be a thing of the first arc of these series. Like, all of these series seem to be really, really focused on the hero's parents.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way, that's sort of like how Ultimate Spider-Man started, because it took Uncle Ben several issues to die in Ultimate Spider-Man. And that also a bit goes back to Miles in Ultimate Spider-Man, right? Like, his parents are very much a part of his run. Did you have any thoughts about how much that they're emphasizing the hero's parents in these stories? I thought that was really weird, because on the one hand, okay, I didn't know that Scott Snyder viewed this as like dark side infused heroes. But on the other hand, it's like, on the one hand, they're dark side infused, and that's obvious, and I can see that. But on the other hand, it's like, man, they have their parents way more in their lives than the others, than the mainline versions do for the most part.
You know, I really thought about it, Bob, but you're right. Now, the question is, why? Why are we doing that? Just because society's hanging on to their parents longer? It's because we're living with them longer? I don't know.
Maybe. Matt, did you have a favorite panel from the first issue of Wonder Woman, Last Amazon, a.k.a. Gateway City?
Yeah. So, Bob, Wonder Woman, like I was saying earlier, like, her weaponry and, like, the stuff they give her in this is just really cool. But it's that Buster Sword. The first time we see that thing, the first time we get a good look at it, it's on page 20. And we have that, like, this creature, but she's got this giant-ass sword that she's using that's straight up from Final Fantasy VII.
It's crazy.
Straight-up copy. Way to go. But it's still cool, because I like to see it. It's a cool weapon. Yeah, big-ass Buster Sword.
Panel was also gear-focused. We see her on 6, right? She's got the armored look, and she's got Bone Pegasus. I thought
yes.
That was great.
Bone Pegasus is awesome. That's such a cool, like, just representation of that that creature, which you're so used to being this beautiful, you know, thing. And out here, it looks like something you see, you know, coming from the apocalypse.
I would want to ask, Matt, have you ever read the Wonder Woman 3-issue miniseries Dead Earth?
No, I have not.
This does really remind me of Dead Earth a lot. Like, just very similar vibe in the art between Hayden Sherman's art on this and Daniel Warren Johnson's art on Dead Earth.
Well, Bob, on the final page of the first issue, you get a good look at it. Just, they have a perfect shot of the Wonder Woman design. Just the armor, she's got her lasso and everything. This design's going to stick for a while. You're going to see this as like alternate attires and alternate versions of it. You're going to, like, when they do the we're going to look at Wonder Woman from other dimensions and things showing up, this is going to be the one. You know it is.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Sure.
This design will stick. It's cool. It's really cool looking.
For sure. Yeah. Well, to move on to issue number 2, Tetricide, I would say my favorite panel is on page 7. And yeah, I do love when the demonic kaiju comes out of an inverted pyramid in the ocean. And I also think that this could be a really funny way to tie in to Absolute Aquaman. Although it is interesting that maybe they will do an Absolute Aquaman, but they haven't so far. I don't know. The choices of who gets an Absolute book and who doesn't is interesting. I guess the answer is, there hasn't been a Martian Manhunter book for a while, and so they wanted to do an Absolute Martian Manhunter to gin up some interest in the character, whereas there is a new regular universe Aquaman book, and I guess they feel like they can't do 2 Aquaman books. That's probably the answer.
I think you're right. They'd basically done the Justice League, though, from when we grew up.
Yeah, like they're only missing Hawk Woman or Hawk Girl. Yeah.
Right. Oh, well. Well, Bob, my favorite panel, this is a weird choice. You're going to think I'm weird for this, but it's on page 10. And it's the way the artist drew Diana's eyes when she first meets Steve.
Real manga influence on the way they draw young Diana.
Yeah, I don't know what it is, but yeah, they really did a really great job with her look in her eyes. Like, she's got that look like she's, you know, it's just really pretty. Like, I guess that's the easiest way to say it. Like, he's trying to capture the beauty of it, but then that you see this in stark contrast later, when she's got like the pink stuff under her eyes, and then later on in the next issue where she's got blood all over her body. Like, it's just the stark contrast between her eyes and then everything else going on. It's really done well. You first see that in that panel.
No, that's cool. I also really liked the way they did her expressiveness. This is young Diana on page 13. She's interacting with Steve. She has a very funny expression. And they also use the phrase Cerebus fur. I think it's her or she tells her mom to use Cerebus fur on Steve. That really made me laugh.
What do you think about her just overtaking this whole war room situation, Bob? That was one of my favorite parts of this.
Oh, that was great. That was great. And then a little later, she's like explaining to a soldier, like, he's like, what does a dead horse eat? And she's like, magic.
Yeah. Which, no shit.
I think that's why I like this book so much, is these kind of offhanded things like, oh, a dead horse eats magic, or, oh, we need the Cerebus fur. Like, there's a wit to this book that I think is like a little bit sharper.
It's wit and a certain charm that the other books don't have, especially the Superman book. The Superman book is not as inspiring as like the Batman book or the fun of this book. Like,
no, that's true. That's true. Well, Matt, in issue number 3, Death of Fear, we meet a Barbara pretty early on. And so we already met Barbara Gordon in Absolute Batman. So do we have to assume this is going to be Absolute Cheetah?
Yeah, it's Absolute Cheetah, but does look like Barbara Gordon. And it is Barbara Minerva or whatever. Nerva looks like Barbara Gordon looks like. Yeah, they all look like.
Yeah. Barbara Minerva does often have red hair. Well, Matt, on page 17, I have to ask, how freaked out were you when Diana cuts off her dominant arm to get Steve Trevor out of hell?
You gotta say that's pretty badass. I was actually shocked. I mean, I knew they were trying to do something extra for Wonder Woman. Because with Wonder Woman, she's not as... They had to change her origin to some degree, and they had to make it a lot more, I don't know, not gruesome, but...
Gritty.
Gritty, yeah, like it's got to be centered in the rich witchcraft piece with Cersei, and that's one way to do it. I mean, get the blood sacrifice stuff, get that out, get the amputate yourself, yeah.
Well, and it does lead to my favorite panel, which is her drawing a magic circle with her robot arm while explaining to the camera that magic is sacred.
yes, it's awesome. God, the more we talk about it, Bob, the more I'm kind of like Wonder Woman may be better than the Batman one. I think I've read the Batman one multiple times now. Yeah. But now you're kind of selling me on it because I'm like, oh yeah, I forgot about the robot arm being so cool. And it happens to be the arm she doesn't have the tattoo on, or she has the magic one. Ooh.
Yeah, because she gets the magic arm to replace the one, and that has the tattoo, right?
Yes, which makes me wonder if that has something to fit in with the Ra's al Ghul stuff, like if that's how you magically seal your arm.
Interesting. Yeah, the secret to Lazarus, it's magic. All right, so number 4 is the Sound of Silence. And I just wanted to note, so we have a reimagination of Etta Candy, who is, you know, in the Golden Age is Wonder Woman's fat, candy-eating sorority girl sidekick. And here, Etta Candy is a black private investigator, and she's the sister of a witch named Gia, who Wonder Woman goes to her witchcraft store to stock up on needed material, witchcraft. And so my favorite panel is page 8, is Wonder Woman asking the candies if they have anywhere that's not in this lovely shop, because there's going to be quite a lot of blood after she does this ritual.
Yeah, in this ritual, guys, it's getting a bit disturbing. She does, you know, she kneels, she covers herself, and she douses herself in blood. She gives herself a crimson mask look. It's kind of gross, but it's how she gets ready for this battle, which also pulls inspiration from something I've had a lot of interest in, Bob, which is The Witcher. Which is not just a video game. It's also a series of novels.
It's a multimedia franchise.
It is, Bob. It's a multimedia franchise. And I will say that some of this reminds me of some of the things we see in The Witcher, where she's preparing to battle these, you know, evil demons, dark creatures, all this kind of stuff, and doing these things to get ready.
That's funny.
I will say, Bob, her Buster Sword that continues to grow.
Yeah, it gets as big as she needs.
Was kind of cool. Kind of outlandish.
When I ask, did her crimson mask, did that remind you of the last Tony Storm Mariah May match?
Sure, Bob, it did, totally, with the AEW reference there, yes.
And one of the other things I love about this is I really like Hayden Sherman's art, and I especially like the way he does the different gods. So, like, he draws Hecate, the goddess of witchcraft, in this one, and she looks a lot like the Indian god Shiva, which was really sick.
A lot of good designs here, a lot of fun with the mythology piece.
Last page, Matt, do you know who Veronica Kale is?
It's one of those that I remember from something, but I don't remember what.
She shows up now and again. She was created back in the aughts by Greg Rucka, and she's basically meant to be like the Lex Luthor to Wonder Woman Superman.
Okay. Yeah, I feel like I knew that at one point in my life, but that's the one I've forgotten.
Yeah. No, that's good. That's good. So going on to issue number 5, No Good Deed. My favorite panel of this was on page 6, and it's Pegasus breathing fire on a missile. Really love Bone Pegasus.
Yeah. Bob, Wonder Woman turns into Medusa. That's my favorite thing. Page 17, man. It's awesome. That was her whole plan. That was her plan all along. That's why she did the whole blood ritual. She turned herself into Medusa. Using her whip somehow. I don't know. She wraps it around her arm. Somehow there's magic that makes her become this creature. And there's fear that she may not be able to undo that spell to go back to being Wonder Woman, which is why we need Steve Rogers.
I love the discourse about the lasso being too cruel a weapon that her mother made. I love that. That's great.
I do like that.
Yeah. All right, Matt. Number 6 is Lady or the Tiger Part 1. I made you watch Lady or the Tiger a long time ago, right?
Yes, you did, Bob.
Yeah. I really love that story. It's a really great short film, listeners, from I think 1942 or 1944, if you want to watch it on YouTube. It's also a really great short story from the 1880s. And we get to see Cersei and Diana discuss it constantly. My favorite panel for this issue would be page 3. We get to see Hayden Sherman's reimagined Hades. I thought that was awesome.
Yeah, I think that's awesome, too. Well, on page 23, Bob. So, yeah, what we end up seeing, we see Hades in hell. Cersei has been captured by Hades, and I guess they're going to use her as a pawn. I have not actually read the next issue, but I believe you have, correct?
Yeah, I have.
Yeah. So, I really appreciate the direction the series has gone, Bob. I love the art. I like the mythology piece that's involved with it. I like the direction they've taken. You know, I'm gonna go ahead and agree with you what you said earlier. I'm just gonna go ahead and shift. I'll say Wonder Woman is better than the Batman one. You've convinced
Batman
me, Bob.
Batman Who Lifts is really fun. I'm also more worried about where Batman Who Lifts is going than I'm worried about where Wonder Woman is going.
Yeah, because I feel like you are right. I think we could have one really good story out of that Batman thing, and then we're gonna have to run into some issues, especially if some of those characters that were so much more supporting in the first arc, if they become like mainstays and have to actually get in like. They start to build the relationships more. Some of that might not work as well.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I'm hopeful, but we'll see. I did want to say just one thing from the issue you didn't read, Wonder Woman 7. I really enjoyed a line that Cersei has to Diana, which is young Diana. Diana, most people can neither communicate with tigers nor fight them and live.
That's true.
Which is very cute. And we do see some good stuff. We do get Absolute Cheetah in number 7. And we get some good stuff with old Barbara Minerva, Absolute Cheetah. So we're ranking these so far. I mean, we'll wait till we get to the end, till we put them on our big ranking list. But we're ranking them so far, Wonder Woman, Batman Who Lives, and Superman.
Yeah, I'd give it to that. I'd go with that, Bob. And I'm going to say that Wonder Woman and Batman, very close in my opinion.
Yeah.
Superman's not bad, but it's not my favorite of the.
Another thing, I think the art on all three of these is extraordinary. I like it a lot. But I would say that I think the Hayden Sherman art and then the Nick Dragata art on Batman are edging out the Rafe Sandoval art on Superman for me just a little bit. Well, listeners, we intend to do the second trades of Absolute Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman in, you know, about 6 months when those are ready. We intend to do those. We intend to check in on the first round of trades of Absolute Flash, Martian Manhunter, and Green Lantern. So join us for those. In the meantime, we should be back in about 2 weeks with an episode of Heart of Hush with a special little segment on a little story called Hush 2 Part 2. In the meantime, thanks for listening, dear listeners. I'm Bob in Cascadia. That's Matt of the Southland.
Thanks for listening.